It's 6 hours Universal Time. Stay tuned for Daybreak Africa coming up after these latest world news headlines.
I'm Tommy McNeil reporting. United Nations Syria envoy Stefan de Mistura told the European Parliament Tuesday that he is uncertain about Aleppo's future.
Clearly, I cannot deny this is a military acceleration. And I can't tell you how long eastern Aleppo will last.
The UN says the Syrian government offensive has forced nearly 16,000 people to flee their homes. Thousands more could follow. Britain and France have called for an immediate United Nations Security Council meeting on the recent increase in hostilities. Russia's UN ambassador, Vitaly Churkin, described the call as a propaganda campaign. At least 71 people were killed when a plane carrying members of a Brazilian soccer team crashed late Monday near Medellin, Colombia. Several people aboard the chartered plane did survive. James Bargent is covering the story.
Obviously, everyone's in shock here. I mean, the fact that it's a football team doesn't make it any more or less tragic, but it definitely increases the shock factor.
The team departed Bolivia to play in the final game of the Copa Sudamericana tournament. Rescue efforts were hindered by the mountainous crash site and low visibility. A U.S. general was blaming human error for a coalition airstrike in September that killed Syrian government-aligned forces near Deir ez-Zor. Brigadier General Richard Koh says the coalition thought it was striking Islamic State forces.
The United States is not only the most powerful and most precise military on earth, we are also the most transparent. When we fall short of our high standards, as happened in this case, we acknowledge our mistakes, we learn from it, and that's what we will do after this event.
Spokesman Peter Cook. This is VOA News. U.S. President-elect Donald Trump has made selections for two more cabinet posts on Tuesday. Trump named Georgia Republican Congressman Tom Price as his Secretary of Health and Human Services. Trump says Price will lead his administration's effort to repeal and replace President Barack Obama's signature health care plan. Also Tuesday, Trump named former Labor Secretary Elaine Chao to head the Department of Transportation. And U.S. President-elect Donald Trump has called Tuesday for stiff penalties for protesters who burn American flags. He said nobody should be allowed to burn the American flag, and if they do, there should be consequences, perhaps a loss of citizenship or a year in jail. The U.S. Supreme Court ruled in 1989 that laws banning destruction of the flag violate the First Amendment of the U.S. Constitution, which protects freedom of speech. A 1958 court decision banned stripping a person of U.S. citizenship as a form of criminal punishment. A United Nations human rights spokeswoman said Tuesday that civilians in the Iraqi city of Mosul are being killed by Islamic State extremists if they attempt to flee or refuse to help jihadists. Ravinia Shamdasani said Nias jihadists have carried out hundreds of execution-style murders of civilians who refuse to allow IS rockets and snipers in their homes or who attempted to flee. In an incident last week, 27 civilians were reportedly executed in northern Mosul for leaking information to Iraqi officials. The Islamic State group says the man who carried out Monday's attack at Ohio State University was what it called a soldier of the caliphate. A statement posted by the group's news agency says Abdul Razak Ali Artan had responded to calls to attack the citizens of what it called international coalition countries. Hundreds of thousands of Cubans gathered Tuesday in Havana's Revolution Square to honor their late leader Fidel Castro. Castro died Friday night at age 90. Beginning Wednesday, his ashes will be carried eastward across the country in a three-day procession. Castro's remains will be buried Sunday in Santiago. A fire at a school in the southern Turkish province of Adana has killed 12 people, including 11 teenage girls. 22 people were injured. That fire broke out in a girl's dormitory late Tuesday. The cause of that fire is still unknown, and it is not clear how many of them actually do, in fact, include children. More information can be found at voanews.com. I'm Tommy McNeil in Washington.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
America. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Mbate in Washington. Today is Wednesday, November 30th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. South African President Jacob Zuma survives a no-confidence vote.
What it does signal is the possibility that the battle to get rid of Jacob Zuma is gaining momentum. The question is whether those who are opposed to Jacob Zuma will have enough support to dislodge him.
That's political analyst Aubrey Masheke. Civil society leaders in Sudan say their 3 days civil disobedience was a success, but the government says it was a complete failure. Labor unions in Zimbabwe plan to stage a protest today against the introduction of bond notes despite police rejection. And Cameroon's government takes a hard line as lawyers and teachers continue their protest.
Those who are responsible for such abuses must know that nowhere in the world disorder and insurrection have ever led to anything constructive.
Issa Chiroma Bakari is Cameroon's Minister of Communication, and AIDS vaccine is underway in South Africa. And Nigeria and Cameroon are in the final of the African Women's Cup of Nations. Those stories, plus our listener of the day, are coming up on Daybreak Africa. South Africa's embattled president has emerged intact from his latest challenge, this one from within his own party. The ruling African National Congress held lengthy closed-door meetings and party members called for President Jacob Zuma to resign, but ultimately decided to let him stay. VOA's Anita Powell reports from Johannesburg.
South Africa's president has been given a reprieve by top members of the ruling ANC. Tuesday's announcement caps 3 days of intense discussions by the nation's top political actors as President Jacob Zuma sinks lower in public esteem amid growing accusations of corruption. ANC Secretary General Gwede Mantashe said the discussions among the six-member National Executive Committee, a group that includes Zuma, were robust, candid, and at times difficult.
The ANC did not support the call for the president to step down.
South Africa's anti-corruption czar recently released a 355-page report documenting the president's links to a wealthy family who have allegedly steered cabinet decisions and improperly influenced government contracts. The corruption allegations have prompted the opposition to cry for his resignation. The mounting scandals also hurt the ANC in municipal polls earlier this year, leading them to lose control of several major cities. But the party's comfortable majority in parliament allowed Zuma to defeat a no-confidence vote earlier this month. The most recent challenge to Zuma came as a surprise when three ANC stalwarts, the nation's tourism minister, health minister, and public works minister, called for the president's resignation, prompting the discussions. The ANC National Executive Committee has the power to demand the president's resignation. It has used it once before, in 2008, ousting President Thabo Mbeki to open the door for Zuma. Analyst Aubrey Mashitli says he does not think the committee's refusal to make Zuma step down means they have confidence in him.
Last weekend's meeting of the NEC, the National Executive Committee of the ANC, was a turning point because what it does signal is the possibility that the battle to get rid of Jacob Zuma as president of the party and all the country is gaining momentum. The question is whether those who are opposed to Jacob Zuma will have enough support to dislodge him before the National Conference of the ANC in December next year.
Mashikli says the next big battle will come then, when the party chooses a presidential candidate for the 2019 election, when Zuma's second term ends.
We are now on the cusp of what may be a divisive and bruising succession battle.
After a wild year, observers say South African politics may get even wilder in 2017. Anita Powell, VOA News, Johannesburg.
Strikes intended to increase the use of English in Cameroon have now extended to schools and universities after lawyers and teachers in English-speaking regions of the country refused to call off their protest. Lawyers and teachers, supported by disgruntled youths, are engaged in running battles with the military for protesting what they called the overbearing influence of French in a country that has English and French as official languages. Moki Edwin Kinzeka reports from Yaoundé.
Nothing in recent years has generated debate and caused panic among government ministers, members of parliament, and traditional rulers as has the strike action, which degenerated into rioting in Cameroon's English-speaking regions. Among those who went to negotiate with the protesters was Prime Minister Philemon Yang. Harmony Bogda, spokesperson for the striking lawyers, says that after discussions lasting 72 hours, attorneys left with an impression the government does not want to listen to them. Bogda says as such, the strike will continue.
We are not going to work. He has opened up the channel for dialogue with government in complement to what the parliamentarians made. He has even insisted that we should approach our Minister of Justice. But since the Minister of Justice is under him, we are hoping that he will be able to deconstruct the wall the minister has built so that we can have an across-the-board dialogue for the interests of this country.
Lawyer Ben Muna of the Cameroon Bar Council Association says his colleagues are also angry because security forces harassed and beat them for demonstrating peacefully.
Any lawyer is free as a citizen to make a demand, even if it's political. So that can be no excuse to ignore them. I say it is not because they want secession that they should be beaten and vandalized. The way forward is that the Minister of Justice should go to Boya, speak to them, Cameroonian to Cameroonian.
Communication Minister and government spokesperson Issa Chiruma says some of the requests made cannot be granted. He blames the lawyers for orchestrating the recent wave of violence in English-speaking regions.
Those who are responsible for such abuses must know that nowhere in the world disorder and insurrection have ever led to anything constructive. We therefore call on all our compatriots to show proof of reserve, self-control, high sense of responsibility and citizenship in a spirit of dialogue.
Since running battles started with the military last Monday, schools have remained closed. The media have been reporting that hundreds of people have been arrested and four people killed since the military used tear gas and live and rubber bullets to disperse crowds. But the governor of the northwest region of Cameroon, Adolphe Lelelafrique Debenchofo, disputes that figure.
It's only one person who died. Investigations are ongoing to establish the responsibilities. I'm therefore appealing to everybody to resume their normal activities and calling on those who have called for a strike, like the governor has stretched their hand to them, to join government to find out long-lasting solution to the problem they are raised to government.
John Frundi, leader of the SDF, Cameroon's main opposition political party, is urging the government to solve the problems raised by the strikers or face more rioting.
We can summon a big rally in town here where we'll talk to the people. But this should be after solutions to the teething problems that the people are asking for have come in from Yaoundé.
English-speaking Cameroonians constitute 20% of the population of 22 million people. The country's constitution states that the two official languages inherited from the English and French colonial period should be given the same consideration. But many official documents are only in French. Some ministers deliver speeches only in French, even in English-speaking regions. Nearly 60 years after independence, no English speaker in Cameroon has held any influential position such as Minister of Defense, Finance, or Territorial Administration. Moki Edwin Kinzeka for VOA News, Yaoundé.
Today is Wednesday, November 30th, and you're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Butt in Washington. Daybreak Africa time is 15 minutes past the hour. Civil society leaders in Sudan say there are 3 days civil disobedience to protest fuel, electricity, and drug price increases was a success. But the government says it was a complete failure. President Omar al-Bashir said government attendance rate was high. Also on Tuesday, government security forces seized copies of 4 daily newspapers. Khalil Tigani, a founding member of the Sudanese National Movement for Change, says the drastic action taken by the government against the 3 newspapers for reporting on the civil disobedience indicate it was successful.
I think to some extent is successful. As an indication, I think the furious response from the government against this move indicates that it is successful because, you know, today the government actually seized 4 newspapers because they covered the news about disobedience the first day. So this is unusual to confiscate 4 newspapers. On the other side, the President Bashir himself comment on press interview today that he thinks that the disobedience was a failure by million persons. So I think this furious response from the government indicates that the disobedience movement actually is successful.
As you mentioned, President Omar al-Bashir said that the 3 days of civil disobedience was a complete failure. And he said because the rate of attendance for employees, particularly the government employees, was high last Sunday. I guess you disagree.
I disagree, of course, because, you know, even for the traffic in the Khartoum, the capital of Sudan, the traffic was very unusual due to this time in a week. And everybody noticed that it is very much unusual. So I think besides that, in the social media and generally in the media, everybody talking about this disobedience. Because this is the first time, actually, during Bashir era that such a move taken place. Because the other people protest by going into streets. But this time, because the government is usually facing these protests by force. So this time, this is a new, actually, means for protest as a peaceful means to protest against the government. So I think as the first time, this is very important turning point in political arena in Sudan.
You mentioned the security forces seizing 4 newspapers. Did the government give any reason? Because in the past, whenever we talked to Minister of Information, Akme Bilal, he would say that perhaps the newspapers say something against national security. Did they give any reason for seizing the newspapers?
No, the Minister of Information said that the government is used to do so. He denied this seizure of 4 newspapers and is related to this disobedience. But because everybody knows that these 4 newspapers actually covered the news of views about the first day of the disobedience. So it's very obvious that this is a direct reason for why the government seized these 4 newspapers.
Khalil Tigani is a founding member of the Sudanese National Movement for Change. He was speaking with me from the capital, Khartoum. Zimbabwean police have declined to grant the country's largest labor movement, the Zimbabwe Congress of Trade Unions, permission to stage protests against bond notes introduced on Monday. The Reserve Bank of Zimbabwe says the bond notes are designed to boost the country's exports. Zimbabwe law required organizations planning to hold public meetings to inform the police. Union Secretary General Jafat Moyo says the union may seek legal action to force the police to grant them permission to stage the protests.
There are many players in this country who are not happy with what is happening. And there are a lot of activities lined up for, I think, tomorrow. I will understand that there are demonstrations. Because we share the same membership with churches, civic society organizations, political parties. So it's likely that our members are going to be part and parcel of these activities. But the one which is organized by the CTU is earmarked for the 1st of December, although we are now having challenges because we have now just received letters from the police that the bond notes have got nothing to do with trade unions. Therefore, we cannot demonstrate against bond notes. So it's something which we are currently debating on how to respond to this ignorance by the police.
What type of measures are you going to take to actually map the way forward?
The membership are going to make a decision whether do we agree with the police, because one, we were merely informing the police as a matter of courtesy. We are not covered by the POSA. So the membership will make a decision whether we are proceeding to do the demo on the 1st or we approach the court to get the protection. That decision has not been made. That's what is being debated now.
What are the dangers of going into the streets without seeking any police clearance?
As usual, the brutality we have faced over the years. Obviously, our people might be arrested, our people might be brutalized, but it's something which we are used to. The membership will make a decision whether they will take that risk. But we are aware of our police officers, the overzealousness, the brutality they are. So we are aware of all those dangers.
So now, you know, what exactly do you want to protest against?
Obviously, we are not happy with the introduction of the bond notes because we don't believe this is money. We are asking the authorities to provide better alternatives. We don't believe that the issue of bond notes is going to resolve the challenges. I think the biggest question is what happened with the money which we saved. We can't be given bond notes when actually we work for that amount, for those monies, and we put them in the bank.
That was Jafat Moyo, Secretary General of the Zimbabwe Congress of Trade Unions. He was speaking with reporter Gabe Dube of VOA's Zimbabwe program. For nearly three decades, every 1st of December, we've heard about the tragedy of AIDS. The virus has killed millions of people, often in the prime of life, and it's left behind millions of orphans. But now, on this World AIDS Day, VOA's Carol Pearson has a message of hope.
A lot has happened since the first World AIDS Day in 1988. Back then, AIDS was a death sentence. The topic was taboo. Now there's life-saving treatment. Mothers with HIV can have healthy babies and live to raise them. And now, scientists are talking about vaccines and a cure. A major clinical trial of an experimental vaccine against the AIDS virus is underway in South Africa. The hope is to reduce the risk of infection by at least 50%. Scientists are also trying to use the body's own immune system to keep the virus in check. One study conducted by the University of Pennsylvania shows this may be possible. Dr. Pablo Tibas, an infectious disease specialist, spoke by Skype.
We infuse antibodies into the patients, the participants in the study, and we want to see if those antibodies would control the HIV virus, would keep it quiet and prevent the virus from coming back when we stop antiretroviral therapy.
Tibas said the research in controlling HIV with antibodies is similar to the immunotherapy being done in the field of cancer. HIV hides in cells. If a patient stops taking anti-AIDS drugs, the virus comes back. The technique uses antibodies, which are proteins, to attack cancer cells.
And when you think about oncology and cancer therapy with these immune-based therapies, what people are doing now in that field is to try to boost the immune system to eliminate the cancer cells. The problem of eliminating the HIV hideout is similar. You want to eliminate the cells that harbor the virus by making the immune system more active in finding and eliminating those cells.
Researchers found that the antibodies suppressed the HIV virus for 21 days. The goal is to find a combination of antibodies that can suppress the virus for 6 months to a year. Then people infected with HIV will no longer have to take medicine every day for the rest of their lives. A new trial using two antibodies should start in the next couple of months. Carol Pearson, VOA News, Washington.
Cameroon and Nigeria will this Sunday play in the final game of the African Women's Cup of Nations, which is currently being played in Cameroon. The two countries reached the final yesterday, Tuesday. Joining us from Yaoundé is Roland Akong, news coordinator of Equinox Radio and Television. Good morning to you, Roland.
Good morning, Mr. James Bossy.
Welcome to Daybreak Africa. What's the mood in your country, Cameroon, now that your country, the Indomitable Lionesses, are going into the finals of the African Women's Cup of Nations?
A lot of excitement, a lot of happiness, a lot of joy. People are really, really moved. Thousands of spectators were in the Amadou Ahidjo Stadium in Yaoundé to watch the encounter. And they cheered the girls up to victory, and they left the stadium very, very satisfied that the girls have qualified to play the finals of the Women's African Cup of Nations that is taking place in Yaoundé.
So, Roland, how do you think the Lionesses pull up this victory over one of Africa's powerhouses, meaning Ghana?
It was not an easy victory, I must admit, because the match during the first half was very, very tight in the sense that the Lions were dominating over the Ghanaian side simply because the Ghanaians were playing very, very defensive while the Lions were kept on attacking. But in the second half, the Ghanaians changed their tactics. They now went to play on the offensive. It was only during the 72nd minute of the encounter that the magical player of the Lionesses of Cameroon, who is called Aboudi Ongene, I think I got the name right, Aboudi Ongene, she is now called the magical player of the Lionesses of Cameroon. At the 72nd minute, she gave a cross, and after a hard fight in the 18-meter box of the Black Queens of Ghana, Raisa Feju came from nowhere and hit the ball into the net. For Cameroon now, we'll have 1 and Ghana 0, picking the ticket for the finals of the encounter.
So now Cameroon is going to go against another powerhouse in African soccer, meaning the Falcons of Nigeria. How did Nigeria get there?
Nigeria beat South Africa 1-0 to obtain that victory. Many people consider South Africa to be one of the weak teams of the competition. And so they thought that Nigeria was going to beat them at least more than 1, 2, 3, or 4 goals to zero. But it wasn't the case. 1 goal to zero, showing that it was not an easy match for the Falcons of Nigeria.
So give me your soccer magic hat and tell me, come Sunday, who do you think is going to be crowned the new champion? The Lionesses of Cameroon or the Falcons of Nigeria?
As a Cameroonian, I would say the Lionesses of Cameroon are going to win the Falcons of Nigeria on Sunday. I'm saying so because the girls are determined. They are very, very determined. Their determination and their courage, their fighting spirit is also coming from the fact that each player is going to take home the sum of 25 million francs CFA. It's a huge sum of money.
That was Roland Akong, news coordinator of Equinox Radio and Television in Cameroon. He was speaking with us from Yaoundé. Briefly, before we leave you, summary of Africa news. South Africa's embattled president has emerged intact from his latest challenge, this one from within his own party. The ruling African National Congress held lengthy closed-door meetings on party members' call for President Jacob Zuma to resign, but ultimately decided to let him stay. And that's it for this Wednesday, November 30th edition of Daybreak Africa. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, I'm James Botti in Washington, wishing everyone in Africa a very good day.
On Africa News Tonight, we let the sound tell the story, putting you in the middle of events from Africa's news to world crises. Africa News Tonight comes to you live from the Voice of America on the following shortwave frequencies, 6080 kilohertz and 15580 kilohertz. We are also live on the internet at www.voaafrica.com.
Hello, Africa. This is Peter Clotty, host of VOA's Africa Weekend show, Nightline Africa. Tune in. You will be glad you did.
Nightline Africa is a fast-paced, tightly edited news show designed to keep our listeners engaged from beginning to end. Nightline comes to you live from the Voice of America on the following shortwave frequencies: 6080 kHz, 49.3 meter band, and 15580 kHz, 19.2 meter band.